also claimed deficiencies would be made up with five-day motel vouchers. Again, how long is all this going to last compared to the longevity of the Ross camp if it were to be cleaned up by the campers themselves, as they agreed to do with the help of the city, as they also agreed to do, but then, according to the campers, welched on? The answer would be that Ross Camp would probably last considerably longer. It would be cheaper. It would give the city time to set up transitional campgrounds. They have no interest in doing that, though. The city camper wreckers, I think my flyer continues, ignored the fact that cramming Ross Camp refugees into the highly limited shelter space would mean shoving or walling out current homeless people and others outside of Ross Camp, of whom there are between 1,000 and 2,000 in Santa Cruz. Ross Camp advocates in court offered to further clean up the camp in conjunction with the city, as I mentioned before, help to clear up the congestion in the camp by working with the city in setting up other safe encampments that would draw off some of the excess and crowded, alleviate the crowded conditions at Ross Camp, and address other problems in Ross Camp as they arose. In response, City Attorney Galagly smeared council member Drew Glover as a drug lover. Repeatedly, yeah, those were the words he used, drug lover. They said, well, your name in high school, you spelled D-R-U, and your last name is Glover. So if you add Drew and Glover together, that's drug lover, isn't it, Mr. Council member, is what the city attorney said in court, in live court. Now, it has to be said that Christopher Crone revealed an email that was sent by Tony Condotti, the Galagly's boss. That's the city attorney, the main city attorney, the official head cheese city attorney in Santa Cruz, who was also in court but didn't argue the case. It was Reed Galagly who argued this case and then used this phrase, drug lover. What Condotti wrote to the city council was this. Dated April 29th, the day of the court hearing, the last part of the court hearing where Reed Galagly made this irrelevant and inflammatory and defamatory statement toward Drew Glover. He said, and the email was addressed to Martine Watkins, the mayor, Justin Cummings, the vice mayor, and council members Myers, Matthews, Brown, Crone, and Glover. And the subject was Quintero versus the city, and that's the name of this lawsuit. Desiree Quintero at the Ross Camp was the lead plaintiff. Following up on my prior message, Condotti writes, this morning during cross-examination, my associate, and doesn't give his name notice, took an unnecessary swipe at council member Glover, referring to the fact that he apparently spelled his name D-R-U as a teenager. It was an ad hominem remark that had no direct bearing on the issues in the case and was not discussed with me in advance. I'm innocent, except this guy is the lead attorney in this case, so why the hell isn't he being fired, is my interjection. Anyway, Condotti continues, so on behalf of myself and my office, I would like to apologize to Councilmember Glover. I'm truly sorry it happened. Best, Tony. Why isn't Galagly, I can never quite get his name right, apologizing himself? My only experience, well, I probably had a couple of experiences with him, but the one that stands out in my memory for him, and I've talked about it on the air, I suspect, is when I was going in for heart surgery 2 years ago, I was fighting a court case and needed to do discovery. He insisted on dragging me into court, in spite of a doctor's recommendation that I had a heart problem. He insisted I get a second recommendation, or that I get a very specific excuse from the doctor for not appearing in court. And this was a minor case. We're talking about an infraction. This was a ticket for being at City Hall as we fought for the rights of people with the Freedom Sleeper Movement, where they gave us citations for being on the city council grounds at night peacefully with our signs and literature. You see, that's now a crime in Santa Cruz, in case you've not been aware of that. You're not allowed to be at City Hall after 6 o'clock at night. That's criminal behavior. Is that because there have been Molotov cocktails threatened? Is that because there's been massive vandalism? Is that because... No. It's just because it was a decision made by the head of Parks and Rec at that time that they just decided they would declare it out of bounds. And essentially, Parks and Rec's decision was under the thumb and the authority of Martine Bernal, the city attorney. Anyway, Galagly is still the city assistant city attorney, still parades around in his expensive suit, expensive-looking suit, and is still getting away with this kind of stuff. And he isn't even named in here as a person who attempted to smear a council member ideologically by using this ridiculous Drew Glover, drug lover stuff. Continuing with the flyer, it's also true that Galagly ignored the threat of solitary camping for vulnerable women. Many women, a number of women, testified at the camp that they felt much safer in the camp for the 6 months they were there than they had before the camp, but they were afraid of facing hostility both from Take Back Santa Cruz trollish types and from police outside and just from various unknown people, because they could no longer have a community of people protecting them as they do in the camp. And I interviewed numerous women who told me the same thing. I presented those declarations to Anthony Prince. However, he either didn't have the time or he felt they were not part of his legal strategy. That's unfortunate. But he didn't present them. And I concluded my flyer by saying the city camp crushers also denied that the city had any requirement to provide alternate shelter under the Boise versus Martin federal court decision of last fall, which was don't cite one person for camping or sleeping unless you have shelter for all. And it wasn't just about camping or sleeping. It was about items that actions that homeless people cannot avoid. And those are the kinds of things that the Santa Cruz Police Department is doing when it cites people for trespassing and sleeping at night on public property when they have no legal place to go. We won one, we lost one, but the struggle continues, said the uprooted residents. We will find another campground, and if we have to, another one after that. And that's certainly going to be the case for people individually. I kind of doubt it's going to be the case for campers, I may have said this already, who are, we had hoped to stay together as a group, some of us, because it's easier to keep the court case going that way, and it's also easier for the community to provide support that way. And who knows, maybe folks will come together. Maybe the community itself will set up a campsite and invite people to come there and just take matters into their own hands instead of waiting around pathetically for the city to take action, which is what is apparently the current recipe for disaster that is used. It's one of the great objections I have with Brent Adams' approach, which is the idea that he can just coax the city into being reasonable. I just don't think that happens without pressure. And hopefully the pressure will continue. And now what I'm going to do is play Anthony Prince's speech that he gave and the comments from various plaintiffs at the press conference they held after the TRO was lifted in San Jose, about 5:30 or 6, in front of the federal courthouse. Anthony Prince talking to the news media, as they like to call themselves.
Does this mean now, what's the next step?
Well,
The next step is not necessarily one within the legal context, because the next step is to continue the organization. The next step here is discouraged. No one here is walking out shedding tears. And that's because for almost a solid week, we pushed back homeless pro se plaintiffs, assisted by attorney, but homeless pro se plaintiffs filed 4 consecutive motions and a summons and complaint against the city of Santa Cruz. We had a temporary restraining order that lasted for almost a week. I don't think that's ever happened in Santa Cruz. A group of homeless people were able to restrain the city for one solid week. We're disappointed in the court's decision. We move on. We're in the ring. We're not getting out of the ring. We think that, I'll tell you now, that I'm a little disappointed that the I feel that the court I will evaluate the record, but it seems to me that we put on solid evidence. We had many declarations, and unfortunately, we were unable to convince the court that there's going to be a harm to people. I would say that the city of Santa Cruz needs to be very careful as they move forward to take the camp down. They promised and they said repeatedly in open court that they have alternative shelter for every single person who's going to be displaced from the camp. We'll see if that actually happens. We're about a union movement. We're about a homeless union movement. And we know how to give a punch. We know how to take a punch and keep on fighting. So our response is to continue to organize. We are at the beginning of something here. This is happening all across the country, and everyone in the country is paying attention to what's happening in Santa Cruz and is inspired by all these people back here who came out of a homeless encampment to challenge the city of Santa Cruz in federal district court. And so we're going to continue. As I indicated to the judge, I am inclined towards filing an appeal in the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. I have not made that decision. I will not make that decision without consulting with all of my fellow colleagues here at Pro Se Plaintiffs, but we will be undertaking those discussions, carefully reviewing the record in this case. But I will say, quite frankly, that I'm inclined towards that because I feel that the elements that need to be shown in order for a temporary restraining order to remain in effect, I believe we showed them. We showed them in spades, in my opinion. So reviewing courts are there. When lower courts make a mistake, there are courts of appeal, so we'll be looking at that. But I'll just finish with this. I think that we are about building something here. We have a real core. I've been informed that people throughout the Santa Cruz community have been coming up to plaintiffs and others saying, man, we love what you're doing. You're standing up. We have homeowners. We have property owners siding with us on this, and I'll say this. Anyone can be in the position of becoming homeless. And I would advise the people, I see you nodding your head because you know it's true, that if you saw the government shutdown of a few weeks ago, a couple of months ago, see how close people were. They were in the bread lines. They were in the soup lines. They went on YouTube to plea for people to help pay the rent. That's how close, and those were civil service federal employees, this close to becoming homeless. It could happen to anyone. The people of Santa Cruz has to ask themselves, do you want to be treated if that happens to you? If you have a family emergency such that all your money's gone and you end up unable to pay the rent and without a place to live, do you want the city of Santa Cruz to treat you in the way that they've treated homeless people here? That's what people need to think about. Our fight is not as far from over. We go back, we continue to organize, and get ready for the next round.
Yes.
So and I think it's just important for you to listen to, especially those from the Ross camp, Santos, and go ahead, come on, introduce yourself and say a few things about how you feel. Say your first and last name, please.
I'm Maggie Rochelle.
Spell the last name, Maggie.
Rochelle.
And you're a Ross camp?
Yes. I came to Santa Cruz from Texas searching for my son, who I had not heard from for 3 years, very unusual for him. I knew he was in trouble. I searched and searched and searched. I narrowed it down to Santa Cruz, and if he had been scattered in the woods somewhere, I would never have found him. But he was at the Ross camp. I did find him. I've been here for 4 months now. My son is doing much better. I've gotten to know many, many people at the camp. They have been uniformly respectful, kind, generous, lovely people, most of whom have suffered some sort of personal, financial, terrible trauma. And my son is in trouble, but he's going to get better. And he's fortunate to have a mother that will travel across the country and be willing to stay at the camp and, you know, loves everybody there. And, you know, I mean, we're all in this together. I guess that's the bottom line.
Right on. Okay. Say your first last name.
Santos Mendez. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. My name's
Santos Mendez. I was born and raised in Santa Cruz. The reason I'm homeless is because of the choices that I made. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to get my life back together so that way I can go back to school, you know, be successful again. You know, I did have a real job and I did have hope, but the choices that I made, like I said, you know, they were bad choices, but I'm trying to get my life better back together. So
where are you going to go now that the camp's going to be closed?
Well, there's some of us that have, we're going to move to another spot, you know. That's what we got to do. We just got to be a little bit more resourceful. We got to be more, you know, help each other out a little bit more better.
Will it be a city?
We're going to try to do that, yeah. We haven't decided where we're going to be, but, you know, it's going to be a spot where it's going to be safe for everybody. You know, nobody's going to have anything to worry about. They're going to be able to walk around and be okay with themselves.
Okay. Are both of you on the plaintiffs?
Other plaintiffs.
Yep.
Both of you.
Hi, I'm Crystal Olson, O-L-S-S-O-N, and I just wanted to say that this is just the beginning. We are going to fight. Look at what happened with slavery, you know, and look at where we are now with that. So this is just the beginning, people.
Alicia. I just want to reiterate what Crystal said. This is only the beginning. As long as the city of Santa Cruz continues to be dishonest and misrepresent the amount of shelter space they have, and as long as they continue to criminalize the homeless, and I don't just mean with camping tickets, I mean with trespass tickets, harassment, as long as those type of things continue to the homeless in Santa Cruz, we're going to keep fighting. We have put together quite a force now, and we're not going to stop until we get some dignity and respect. And all I can really say is we've only just begun.
Can you say your first and last name, please?
Alicia Kuhl, A-L-I-C-I-A-K-U-H-L.
Are you one of the plaintiffs, or?
I am an organizational plaintiff, and I am the Ross Camp liaison, and I'm going to be the next camp liaison.
Anyone else? Keith? One thing you guys should know is that, Keith, did you want to say something?
Yeah, I was just
okay, then Keith talk.
Go ahead. This is Keith.
So,
Keith McHenry.
Two basic things is it's clear that there will be, that the Ross Camp people will be living outside in the next couple of days, no matter what the situation is, because the city definitely did not offer any possible place for people to really stay for any given amount of time, like 5 days, now it's 3 days, and then at the most a handful of people will get to stay at 1220 for 2 months. And so in the end, you're going to see people living all over the streets again. At the same token, the Union of the Homeless and groups like Food Not Bombs will work in solidarity to set up new camps. So, of course, I think we've come to the agreement that the next camp will be called Heroes Camp, and that it'll be in the city limits, it'll be self-managed, and it'll be organized with forethought, contrary to how Ross Camp developed, and that we will see that we are the people that are going to be providing safe accommodations and sleeping place for people to sleep, and that that's actually going to be a community effort as opposed to a city effort, and that we're sadly going to see the failure of the city's plan. It'd be wonderful if they really housed everybody. I think everybody would love that.
That'd be great.
But that's not even possible, according to what Susie O'Hare said. She offered actually no information about resolving this crisis. It was just some promises, and we've seen those are the same promises that we've had over the years that have resulted in the current situation of there being hundreds of people needing a place to live.
One thing I want to clarify is that this was an effort on our part to get the judge to freeze everything in place to maintain the status quo while we proceeded with our federal civil rights lawsuit. He elected to dissolve the TRO that was in effect for almost a week. However, the underlying federal civil rights lawsuit goes forward. We have made a jury demand in this case, and ultimately it will be a jury that will decide whether the city of Santa Cruz has violated the constitutional rights of poor and homeless people, and we believe that they have. And unfortunately, we believe that they will continue to violate those rights. So sometimes people are don't understand that this decision here does not end it. This is only a temporary setback for us, and we intend to go forward and aggressively pursue this case all the way. So with that, I want to thank everyone in the media for coming out and covering. We hope that you guys will continue to tell the true story, not just one side, but both sides. And you guys were present in court and heard some of the testimony. You heard all the testimony, didn't you? And so that testimony, I think, was compelling. And hopefully we'll have some good stories. We're available to provide more information. And thanks so much.
Ms. Prince, what's your phone number? Do you have a card?
No, my phone number.
Back a day to the Sunday before the Monday of that press conference.
So it's a sunny day here, April 28th. Still the temporary no parking A-frames are up all day from 423 to 424, blocking parking along the right side for about 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, about 16 or 18 spaces. And there's one car parked here anyway, which is good because it's only dated 23rd.
And this is a commentary observation about many parking spaces being sort of kept out of public use. The ones closest to the Ross camp, which has housed a police substation, I think 3 days a week, this long police vehicle, it's or trailer, if you will. But it was actually happening the same A-frame, no parking was out there. No parking signs were out there again today on May 2nd when I went out there to the Ross camp the day before the demolition. Although the signs on the of these A-frames said April 23rd, April 24th, no parking. No one has bothered to take them down or even to change them. And I guess one wag began removing them and putting them off to the side. And other people began parking there. So that seemed like a good thing to me. But back to April
28th. Wild, crazy. Why would they be blocking things off? It's pretty quiet at the campground. We have 3, 6, 8 trash cans full back again. And also 4 hand washing stations and looks like 8 porta potties.
Well, what we're talking about here is that there was a time during the court hearing when the city pulled out many of the porta potties and the hand washing stations. And this alarmed one of the plaintiffs, a person who lives in Ross Camp, Mike Sweat, who actually left the court and went back because he was afraid his possessions were going to be taken. The city attorney, Galagly, admitted that this had been a screw-up, as he put it, and that at this point, the facilities were returned, but of course, as of tomorrow, there will be no more facilities there, and there'll be no more facilities for those hundreds of people who are being essentially dumped out into the community without any accommodations. And so if you wonder what that smell is in the air in that particular alley, it has to do with the fact that facilities no longer being available that were available for the last 6 months.
Man, plus three of them. Two disabled, actually. Pretty good.
Daniel
and his pooch.
Oh, Nymeria.
And you say you just read this fine flyer that I wrote and you thought it was okay? Or
I think it's perfect because we don't hear anything about what's going to happen after we do leave, or there's definitely not enough spaces for everybody that's here. And
Yeah, there's a lot of women here. Everybody here is safe.
How long have you been here?
Pretty much since it started.
And have you had any conversations with Susie O'Hara or Megan Bunch or anybody from the city, those two who come in?
Yeah.
What have they said to you?
I can't really remember. I pretty much just listened to what they were talking about.
Were you reassured by anything they said?
Nice. Not really.
Sorry.
No.
Want another one?
Yeah, please.
So what are you going to do if the camp is dispersed? What do you think your tentative thought is? It's hard to figure out a plan when you don't know what the hell is going on. I would find it hard. But.
I've been trying to think of an alternative plan, and it hasn't really come up yet. So I don't really know. I'd probably just start camping out around the beach again and getting harassed by the cops, and pretty much open to whatever kind of threats are out there. Which are a lot.
What do you think about the idea
for the women? For the women around here, it's a tight community where everybody's kind of watched, and I was actually surprised on how long this community's existed here with the lack of fights and ODs, and there's been no trouble really. Everyone gets along pretty well.
Now, somebody was telling me that this everyone here uses drugs, that this camp is organized around drug sales, and that this is people feel been forcibly injected with drugs. Have you seen any of that?
I've seen no one forcibly injected with anything. I believe Santa Cruz itself is infused with drugs. I mean, almost every popular singer that ODs gets their drugs from Santa Cruz.
Really? Is that true?
Pretty much. Jerry got his drugs from here. And Bradley Noel got his drugs from here.
Oh, it's a thriving industry.
A thriving thing in Santa Cruz. And
more so here than elsewhere in Santa Cruz, what would you say?
No, that's just blaming it on poverty. I mean, we're all so poor, we can't afford the amount of drugs that most people are buying to make Santa Cruz the drug capital of California per capita.
How many folks would you say you know personally in the camp?
I don't know. I try to keep myself to myself, but I'd say probably half of them.
And would you say what percentage are regular hard drug users, if you could venture a guess?
I don't know, probably 50%.
How much does that interfere with their day-to-day functioning?
I mean, how much does being a drug addict interfere with your day-to-day function?
I don't know.
It turns into your day-to-day function.
So you find it pretty much takes up the 50% of their lives.
Yeah.
So anything any message you would have for the general community about folks living here and what you would hope from the community and what you're thinking about this current court case, which, as you know, has stopped the city from dispersing the camp.
As of now, we're all in one spot. If you disperse us, we'll be everywhere.
Where were you before this? Where you were said the beaches you mentioned?
Pretty much sleeping on the beaches or in parks, getting out of park, kicked out of parking lots, or
Are you likely to go to the Poganip, to the parks? Do you have any sense of that?
I have no idea, really.
And the other thing is, some have suggested it's good for a core group of the camp to stay together wherever they go. And then if the police move them, then just move to another place. What do you think of that idea?
It's a good idea. Nobody ever messes with a hive. They always just pluck off the individual bees.
Buzz, buzz.
Yeah.
We've been talking with?
Daniel.
Anything you want to add, Daniel?
No, thank you.
Thank you.
Broken down and tired of living life on the merry-go-round, and you can't find a fighter, but I see it in you, so we can walk it out. Move mountains, we can walk it out and move. Yeah. the silence is a quiet, and it feels like it's getting hard to breathe. And I know you feel like dying, but I promise we'll take the world to its feet. Move, I won't dance, bring it to its feet.
That was Andra Day, Rise Up, with a video about her taking care of a guy in a wheelchair, apparently with some kind of brain disorder. Nice song. People came to the hearing in San Jose on Monday. One of them was Wes White, and we grabbed him at the Jack in the Box and interviewed him. So it's April 29th, about 12:30, we're here in the San Jose Jack in the Box talking with
Wes White.
And Wes, you just sat through 2 hours of proceedings in Judge Davila's court. Do you have any comments on that?
Okay. Well, you know, I appreciated Keith McHenry's testimony pretty good. I think they tried to squelch him from being able to talk about imminent harm of what happens to people if they get split out of the camp, you know, because a lot of people do have very small circles of habit or, you know, routine, and it does make it harder if you have to relocate. How do you get back at it?
Now, this was, of course, the witnesses called were by Attorney Anthony Prince, who's an advocate for the California Homeless Union, and who's been asking questions of witnesses on the basis of his organizational ties with the lawsuit, since he is one of the organizations represented. Looks like he'll probably be the only organizational person to be asking questions at this hearing. Keith McHenry, of course, is also the head of another organization, Food Not Bombs, and he was testifying that they provide food at Ross Camp, and that if Ross Camp is dispersed, and it took a while for this testimony to actually get to it, that the problem would be not so much that there isn't a place where they can go and get food on Saturdays and Sundays, but that there will be a transportation problem both for those days and also for the rest of the time, because there's no place that food could be delivered in one particular spot. Although
One individual in our conference a few minutes ago suggested that the judge was biased and actually trying to lead the witness in favor of the prosecution to indicate that there wasn't any food problem. What's your sense about that?
Oh, man. I did get the feeling that he was just like, well, but they can go anywhere. You're going to be around the whole time, so they're guaranteed to be able to see it again. You'll be there indefinitely, correct? But there again, the proximity of place, like I said, the routines, when people can do things, just establishing a routine, I think, is hard enough. And, the people are already there. That actually is why it became a resource of a stop to be there to begin with.
Now, this led at least one individual to suggest that the case should be appealed because the judge was actually acting, going beyond the scope of his attempt to just simply clarify and get information, actually presenting evidence for the prosecution. As an experienced legal hand at this, what do you think?
All right, I'm going to let that one ride.
So now we jump back to the April 23rd council meeting, the actually last council meeting that was the last council meeting. Another one is coming up on May 14th, as mentioned before. And outside the council meeting, since I'm not going to bother to play for you inside the council meeting, though some of the discussion was interesting, you can find it, however, online at the council website, or the city's website under Santa Cruz City Council. This, of course, was the council meeting where Councilmember Cummings essentially moved to close the Ross Camp, and that is what is going to be happening tomorrow. If you want to know who's to blame for that, it is Cummings, because he is the fourth vote. He's the man who essentially made that decision. Really angering to some of us, because he was elected on what seemed to be a different platform, though I guess there was a Ross Camp when he was running, and the issue didn't really come up per se during the election campaign, but it was the homeless issue was there. Anyway, here's discussion outside the council meeting by the large crowd that was essentially there. It was before the actual vote on the homeless issue, which happened in the afternoon.
Currently being interviewed by...
What is your biggest concern regarding homelessness in Santa Cruz?
Biggest concern regarding homelessness in Santa Cruz. I've always been sort of focused on the criminalization of homeless people, the tickets they get, the less than first class status they have, the difficulties they have doing the most basic things, not so much because of the lack of services, because of the denial of ordinary services and humanship to them. And there's a whole structure of laws in Santa Cruz, the most famous of which is the sleeping ban, but there are all kinds of other ones, like there's a sitting ban, there's a spare changing ban, there's a you can't sit on a bench for more than an hour regulation, there's a law here at City Hall, you can't be here after 6 o'clock at night. If you're even peacefully protesting, you're sitting on a bench with a sign. So there's a whole bunch of laws that have been designed to either criminalize homeless people, give the police vast powers to do that, or make it difficult for people to engage in peaceful protest about these same issues. Does that answer your question?
And if you could ask Councilmember Glover any question, what would you ask?
Well, when are you going to move to fire the city manager?
Take that from you. And would you mind signing a release form?
No, it's fine. Sure. Here in the break, and we're waiting for the city council to return from its closed session, where a motion to go into closed session, opposed by Drew Glover, but supported by everyone else, and actually pushed by Justin Cummings, was taken in the midst of another motion by Councilmember Glover to allow for voluntary repatriation to the Benchlands campground, and also, but no action on anything until after the court decision. Also considering having the Association of Faith Communities run a reduced campground at Ross, and that was pulled back. We're listening to two council members discuss, non-council members discuss the issue.
Yeah, we are superseding all council members out of dire necessity. We feel that they're, even the best of them, are out of their depth in these matters and proceedings.
More,
but some of them are trying.
More interesting would be what you were actually talking about, not the latest improvisation for comic effect.
Yeah, okay.
What now, were you saying before?
Well, I'm saying Chris Krohn played a good, strong role. He is standing by basic principles and reminding us that the UN Declaration of Human Rights, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, should be the basis for all actions by governments and communities. And he's right about that. That's a much better basis from which to act than all these legalisms and mires of morality that they get into here. And you've been here so long, Robert, and seen it over and over. I'm sitting watching the back of your head with your beautiful silver locks, and I'm saying to myself, this poor man, he's seen this over and over, and it's identical every time. There are some slight differences, and I think Drew is trying to lay down a Martin Luther King. He made a big speech today, a major speech, in which he laid out the moral principles of not being cruel to suffering human beings, basically. And it's good that he did that, because it's on the historical record, at least locally.
It's kind of hard to say, to oppose such a set of principles. The real issue is what you do to implement them locally, and that's really the problem with the city council.
Well, that's why this is a good move that the progressives are calling for this working group or committee, whatever it does. They want it to be democratic and inclusive, so that we help design the program.
Why do we need a fucking working committee? That was done 20 years ago.
No, but this is to design actual programs that would establish camps and shelters.
They continue doing the same thing with this. You're talking about the homelessness committee, right?
I guess that's what it's
called. A bunch of people who get together and jabber for another half year. I'm sorry.
I hope not. I hope it
will.
Were
you here in the 2000? I mean, didn't you see that happening?
No, but I'm not assuming that it will be a repeat.
Wouldn't you assume that? I mean, you know, because the proposals are already here.
I think now there are enough people of intelligence and purpose and experience who would like to work together to set up a realistic solution or program. That's my hope. I'm only expressing
I think they would have said the same thing 20 years ago and the same thing 40 years ago. Yeah, so what?
Well, you're the cynic. I'm not a cynic.
It's not that I'm a cynic. I was there and I saw it happen, here observing today the council meetings. We have a different perspective.
But I want to raise another important thing. You could probably answer this legal question. Isn't it true the city council just went into
closed session?
I thought there was no real basis for doing that.
I didn't either in the city. Well, let me put it this way. It looked like an attempt to derail Drew Glover's motion that he made right before they did it. And it was done by Justin Cummings. It looks to me like it's an attempt of, there's some sort of rivalry between the two, because you may remember Cummings was going to, he pressed this motion to close Ross Camp. That was his motion. He and Watkins wanted to close Ross Camp permanently, even though there's inadequate shelter.
Yeah.
We talked to him for 3 hours last night about that in the Saturn Cafe.
Oh, boy.
And his only response was, he was friendly. He said, well, the county is making us do it or they won't give us the money for the 1220 River Street. That's number one. And number two, we're going to hold the staff accountable if they don't have enough beds. And I said, what about the homeless people who scattered all over the streets? Well, we're really hoping that won't happen. Is it Susie? It's the kind of thing Susie O'Hara says, which is, our intention is to do this and this and this. But you see, it's clear that's insincere, because
the question that Chris Krohn asked her was, what are your resources? Actually, it was Drew Glover. What are your resources? How many beds do you have? And, eventually she gave that answer, but she didn't point out that those are beds which have to be shared with 1,000 homeless people
right,
outside.
Right. She always gives these statistics in a very misleading way, Ms. O'Hara. I've noticed that.
I
don't know if that's intentional. I think it's kind of brushing over the shortage all the time.
Well, I think she wants to, you know, to support the city manager's position.
Oh, yeah,
she is an assistant city manager.
Yeah,
after
none of these people are autonomous. They're all part of a smooth operations machine. Thank you, Robert.
Will you be coming to the Conscious in Action meeting tomorrow at 11?
Yeah.
All right, we'll see you there. Talking with
Alicia Gould.
Alicia, are you saddened by this recent decision?
Oh no, I'm ecstatic.
What has made you so happy?
Well, we got a temporary restraining order against the city from doing any action on the Ross camp until it can be heard on Friday by the federal judge Davila at 9 a.m. in federal court in San Jose.
And what do you, is there any more to the order than that, or was that pretty much it?
I will have to take a look at the order, but it is my understanding and based on Mr. Condotti's statement that they will not be able to do any action on the Ross camp until our case is heard Friday morning at 9.
Now you went over to San Jose this morning.
I did.
And what was your purpose there?
My purpose there was to file a motion. It was a supplemental supplemental attachment to our previous complaint, and it was to show imminence. Based on what happened yesterday, it was to show that we are really requesting an immediate decision based on a TRO, based on what happened yesterday. We don't have time to waste. They were going to disband the camp completely tomorrow by 4 p.m., and so we needed to let the judge know that it's of utmost importance that we get an immediate decision.
Now, anything happen over in San Jose that you found of interest? Or was it sort of a routine filing?
It took me 30 seconds to file it. Betty at the courthouse there is really, really nice.
And you've been listening and sitting to most of this city council meeting. What have you heard so far that struck you most strikingly?
Well, it was the same old shit show. It started out not really caring about people, different ways to get around, the fact that we have no available shelter beds, a whole bunch of lies, and basically everybody was going to vote. In speculation, I think, at least a majority of the vote was about to close the Ross camp, and we have essentially at least temporarily derailed that from happening.
Any particular comments by any council members that you found noteworthy?
Of course. I always would like to say that Drew is very supportive of the homeless population here. He meets with us. I like the fact that empathy was discussed, dignity, treating people like people. We need to stop calling the people over there campers. We can either refer to them as residents or people. We need to start treating people with more respect. We definitely need a moral revival around here, and that there's at least a couple of our city council members that know that and some that don't.
We have another immoral individual here from the tenants union.
I don't want to interrupt that.
No, you.
You're next.
Yeah. I didn't have that much to say.
What's your name?
Hi, my name's Cynthia Berger.
Cynthia, what's your neck of the woods here?
I'm a tenant activist, tenant organizer, tenant advocate.
And we see that tenant organizing is, well, how is it in Santa Cruz these days? As if I didn't know.
Tenant organizing is a very interesting point right now because there's there are a lot of bills in the California legislature for new tenant protections, and that's because advocates have succeeded in getting through to legislators, and that means that whoever's supporting those advocates, you know, that's a growing group. So I feel that tenants are starting to become have an identity as a voting body. And
more so than last year?
Yes, I think they are going to feel that it's absolutely necessary pretty soon, because most tenants are going to be either homeless or for part of the year in the next few years. So they're gonna see the great organizing that the homeless people are doing, I think. And for me, it's all one population, like I say.
Will we be seeing you at the next Conscience in Action Huff meeting?
I don't know. I have my own agenda and things that I have to do to make money and stuff. So I'm definitely not going to a lot of meetings, because I don't find that is helping me to organize any tenants here. But I do like to know what's going on and, gather feedback from folks. And, if people have any input about how to organize tenants, I'm always open to that.
Well, we are, of course, a wealth of information about tenant organizing over there at the Huff area.
Right. So there needs to be more cross-pollination. And, in fact, there should be some homeless folks. And I did see a homeless person, which, an unhoused person, attending one of the tenant counselor trainings. It was really great to see. The guy with the pirate hat, I forget his name.
Pirate, also known as Mark, perhaps?
No, he's got another name. But at any rate,
sure.
So that would be great to see more cross-pollination like that, because it's an artificially divided and conquered group. And now people are realizing that they thought that they were stably housed, and so many people are realizing that they are not, their housing is not stable by any means, and their wages are so low that they could easily be out on the street when they're old people. And so it's a good time for them to get together.
Anything coming up around the tenants organizing groups or workshops?
What there is the city did fund a group of us, which I was on the organizing committee for the group, and it's called Tenant Sanctuary, and it's going to provide basically what I've been doing for the past 5 years, is people will call me and I will counsel them. And
you're gonna get paid for this, actually?
I'm not and I'm going to be an employee of Tenant Sanctuary. I'm just an advisory.
But someone will be paid?
Well, there's $30,000, and some of that will go to pay, a coordinator, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Tenant, perhaps.
We have a great one, actually. We'll have to see. I'm not sure what the process is.
Well, I think I saw one of your flyers, and there was some sort of meeting coming up, or maybe I missed it, for a sanctuary training.
Sanctuary is having regular trainings, and the best way to find out about them is to go to their Facebook page. It's the only Tenant Sanctuary on Facebook. So just type in Tenant Sanctuary, and if there's an upcoming training, the date will be there, and soon the office will be open certain days of the week, and like a weekday evening. I'll be working on Thursdays from 2:30 on till about 8, starting soon. I'm pretty experienced, and then there's other newer counselors, but they all have access to more experienced counselors. So fortunately, the city didn't give us enough money to actually offer legal representation and hire a lawyer, but we can put people in touch with tenant lawyers for free consultations.
Anything you want to add?
No.
And we've been talking with
Cynthia Berger from Santa Cruz Tenants Association. You can, the Hot Tenants Rights Hotline is 831-222-0359, 831-222-0359, and you can always find my website if you just type in Santa Cruz Tenants Rights.
Thanks, Cynthia.
Thanks, Robert.
Speaking with
Pat Malo.
And Pat, you and I and a bunch of other folks were outside waiting for the closed session to get back into open session, but you're here for another item.
Yeah, I'm here, two birds with one stone or whatever, here to support the homeless issues, and then also we've got cannabis issues coming up sometime whenever this is done.
And, you know, those are the biggest of those issues for me is, you know, the tax rate reduction, because basically in this new experiment called regulated cannabis, few of the old actors have been able to pass through, and the ones that remain have had to, you know, take on money and to be able to make the next steps. And
if you were to contrast the cannabis retail scene 3 years ago in Santa Cruz, and then even in the county, and I know we'd be talking more medical than recreational, but How has it changed?
Well, and so the retail is a lot of the same actors, which is, you know, another issue. I don't think the retail thing over the last 5 years has really been open and representative of the old Prop 215 system. But if you include cultivators and all the other small businesses in this, statewide we've seen 95 to 99% of those old legal medical businesses not being able to transfer into this new regulated system. Locally, we've got, you know, probably similar numbers. You know, some folks
have, percentages again.
I would 95% of folks who have of the, you know, tens of thousands of small medical cannabis businesses that were obeying the old Prop 215 SB 420 set of rules. The amount of them who's been able to get into this new state licensing system is probably 5% at most.
Now, but was this one of the reasons you opposed the, or did you oppose?
Yeah, I opposed Prop 64. Another organization, community or Cannabis Advocates Alliance, that was organizing, years ago. We ran an ad in the Good Times saying California deserves better about Prop 64. 215 wasn't perfect or anything like that, but it was, you know, a much, much more inclusive system. This 64 was written by, you know, millionaires for a billionaire, and you basically have to be a millionaire or a billionaire to be involved in cannabis at this point.
And have millionaires and billionaires profited by this?
Well, if profited is a hard thing to say, because, you know, one of the realities of today is because of the high taxation, the cost of these licenses, and the cost of compliance, is that most businesses in cannabis are operating the way that, say, Amazon or other startups will operate, is that they're not technically making profits. They're building portfolios to take on new funding rounds. And so most of what's out there is large, you know, speculative investors who are pouring into cannabis because they see it as this next big thing. And most businesses out there are either, you know, looking for that capital to be able to make the steps, or looking to sell to those folks because no one is making money in cannabis, in legal cannabis anymore, or illegal for that matter.
What's the impact on poor people who are in need of cannabis?
Well, so, you know, there's some specific things of where this new regulated system, even giving cannabis away by a licensed cannabis business to a medical patient, you still have to pay state excise taxes and other.
Cut you off. It looks like council is resuming.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're talking with
Altera Hatton.
And you've been at most of this meeting, if not all of it?
I have been at all of the meeting, yes.
And what led you to come to this particular meeting?
A number of volunteers and myself have been serving lunch to Ross Camp on Saturdays over the last 9 weeks, and we've got to know the people who are living there and have some idea of the concerns that they have. And I really wanted to make sure that they were well voiced today.
And how often have you gone out to Ross Camp?
Weekly for about 10 weeks, and maybe once or twice a week each week.
And this may be a challenge for you because you're in a wheelchair.
I am. I'm in a power chair, and it has been a challenge. At various points, it was very muddy, and there was a difficult time getting through. I think the recent cleanup made a huge difference, and I'm hoping to see future cleanups as well. So.
And, of course, have you been assaulted by madmen with hypodermic needles?
No. I'm laughing because it's so far from that, I can't tell you. So the first time we served lunch, I thought I was just being a neighborly thing. I didn't think I was going to keep doing it. So my wife and I showed up with 27 boxes of macaroni and cheese, and we had trouble carrying them up that rather steep path from the Gateway parking lot. And people rushed to help us set up our tables, help us serve food, help us clean up afterwards, thank us for being there. And I see an amazing community there of people I'd be honored to call friends.
And will you be going out there again?
Yes, this afternoon.
And does your group have a name, or are you just an independent group, or are you just a bunch of ne'er-do-wells?
We're neighbors who care. Many of us are professionals. We cook typically on Friday night. We give away food just to people on an individual basis. We're not like a professional kitchen or a professional organization. We're not a church. We're just neighbors.
Have you had any discussions with any of the city council about their plans for Ross Kemp?
Here and there. And I think that they all want to see something better. I think there's a lack of good choices available. I think there's a lot of goodwill and a lot of good intention. And I think that given their position as part-time city council members with huge workloads, coming up with something that works for everyone is very difficult. I think as a community, we have to figure out partnerships and solutions that we can offer to them and make those realities come true.
Now, as a person in a wheelchair, wheeling your way into that camp, did you find anybody else who lives there who is differently abled, as one might say?
I don't know if you read the Point in Time report, but 65% of homeless in Santa Cruz, according to the ARS survey, have a physical disability. And at Ross Camp, I would say it's even higher. I think it's closer to 80%. There are people in wheelchairs, there are people using walkers, there are people with a multitude of disabling conditions there, and it's heartbreaking.
Now, what were you hoping for out of this city council meeting today?
I was hoping for a humane solution that didn't re-traumatize people who have been traumatized since they lost their housing. And I've seen that. I've seen our city council members work very hard towards that solution.
Well, of course, the solution proposed by Cummings and Watkins was kill the Ross Camp, send them all over for 7 days to San Lorenzo, and then dump them wherever we can. That's my view of it. But did you favor that? Not necessarily the way I put it, but the resolution that the Watkins and Cummings proposed.
Yeah, I definitely see that resolution differently, so I'm thinking of how to word this. Give me a moment. I see people working very hard to try to improve a situation, and you know, one of the biggest issues that we have is funding. And so if you want to know why we're in this situation and how things are going to proceed, you always have to follow the money, right? And so in this situation, I saw people trying to do their best to meet the needs of the financiers, as well as the people that are their constituents and the residents of their city. And I'm glad to see that it didn't go forward as planned, obviously.
Uh-huh.
But I also see that there are many hard choices ahead of us, and I'm not sure which ones are going to go forward. So fingers crossed everyone follows their heart when they vote.
We still have a camp to go out to. When are you going out next Friday, you say?
We'll be out there this Saturday, and I'll stop by this afternoon if they need water.
You may or may not have a camp on the Saturday, depending on what the TRO decision is and what the city council decides when it comes back from the closed session. What do you think of that movement into closed session rather than discussion here in an open session?
Yeah, I have mixed feelings. You know, I work as a mediator, so I'm probably always going to see both sides of things, just to give you a heads up. But, you know, personally, I find it very difficult to have functional and accumulative conversations in their kind of rigid format the city council is set up in. And I think a lot of small questions need to be asked that maybe don't need to be asked in front of the general public. However, I also value democracy, and I feel like we've lost a lot of transparency along the way, and I'm really concerned about losing more transparency. So I see both sides of the situation, unfortunately. Sorry.
So you weren't alarmed when they went into closed session? Although that happened on the heels of Glover's resolution that the Ross Camp be retained as an Association of Faith Communities matter, and also that it be a voluntary transfer rather than an involuntary one. That was quickly stopped by Justin Cummings, and we're off to the closed session.
I have a great deal of faith in the people at City Council. I think a lot of...
Silly girl.
I know. I've been around the block for a while. I've also judged people and their character for a long time. But the interesting things about being disabled is that I often have to ask for help from strangers. So I literally get to fall backwards into the arms of people I don't know in order to get down curbs and to get down stairways and staircases. So it gives me a really interesting perspective in judging character. We have a number of city council members with excellent character, and I trust their judgment.
Well, I'd say next time you fall backward, talk to someone at Ross Camp, not to a city council member.
I would
try. Not to Susie O'Hara. That's my best advice.
No comment.
Martine Bernal might be your man. For he is the most powerful official in the city.
I think our city structure is very intriguing. It's different than anything I've experienced before it.
You are so diplomatic.
You know, I actually have a certificate in diplomacy from Geneva.
I won't call it wishy-washy, but maybe I will call it wishy-washy. Anyway, we've been talking with...
Altera Hatton. Thank you. I enjoyed the interview.
Thanks, Altera.
It should be on free radio.
The meeting may begin any moment, but before that, we have Shantanu Pukan. You spoke at the mic with your reservations about concerns about... You're a birder, as you said.
I'm a birder, that's right. Yeah.
But you didn't have your binoculars with you, or do you?
For once, I'm not prepared.
Watch these bird brains. You spoke at the mic about the importance of how San Lorenzo Park needs to be protected from what you felt was activity that... Well, you felt disadvantaged the environment previously. Well, you put it in your own words.
So what I was saying earlier was that the San Lorenzo River is a really, it's a magnet for wildlife, especially bird life, birds that breed along the river. But that stretch of San Lorenzo River that's at the benchlands is probably the richest part of the entire stretch of San Lorenzo in the city, because it has no levee there and because there's a row of 10 or 12 cottonwoods there, which is not the case for any other stretch along the river. So that, and also the island that's across the that's just north of the footbridge, those two together make that the richest part of the San Lorenzo ecosystem for breeding birds, and this is the height of the breeding season. So to locate the benchlands camp there, even if it's very temporarily, would be a real disruption to the breeding birds. That's one of the concerns that I have with the benchlands.
Concerns.
Well, yes. My other concern is that when the benchlands was there, and I use the park, I use the river levee like two or three times a week, I had two or three incidents happen where the homeless...
Somebody with a stick telling you not to cross the bridge?
Well, daring me to cross the bridge, standing smack dab in the middle of the bridge. And I did take the chance to walk past this man. And as I did so, he whispered a racial, you know, epithet.
So he was upset in me. Darker, somewhat, not very dark hue.
Yeah. Yeah, and this kind of thing happened about two or three times, not with the same person. And it hasn't happened since the benchlands encampment has been moved.
Have you gone to the Ross camp and checked out there?
I have gone. I know some of the homeless because I walk there so frequently. And so I stopped and I talked to them, and I said, these people that I knew, and I asked them, you know, why is this happening again and again? And they said, because they think you're Muslim.
Yeah, it's bullshit. I hear you. It's ridiculous.
But that happens. I mean, you know, that's...
We've been talking with...
Pardon me?
Your name again?
Shantanu Pukan.
Thank you.
I think I'm gonna get me some happy.
Freedom 90 by Pitch Perfect 3. I've never heard before. Nice sound. Bunch of white girls dancing, but I like the sound. So another old-time activist at the temporary restraining order hearing the last day was activist Becky Johnson, who's been away from Santa Cruz for a number of years. She's now resident way down in, well, not way down, but a county below us, Monterey County. Been working with Salinas's Wes White, who you heard earlier, and his Monterey County homeless advocates. Let's tune in on her and her reaction, well, her report. Here's what she had to say after the trial.
Okay, well, today is the 29th of April, and it's 20 to 8. I'm talking with
Becky Johnson.
Becky, I know you just returned from a court hearing on the Ross Camp temporary restraining order, which was lifted, I guess it'll be lifted as of, what is it, tomorrow?
They're going to be issuing 72-hour vacate notices tomorrow.
Starting at?
I guess. 7 a.m.
I'm not sure they had a time. I don't remember if it was 7 or later. I think it might have been in the afternoon.
All right.
You were sitting. You got here about 8 or 9. What, 9 or 10 in the morning? And you sat through what, 6-8 hours?
My car was parked for 10 hours in the San Jose parking lot. So
what did you see in that period of time that struck you the most, or was it all pretty much the same, or what's the story?
Well, I saw the whole thing from beginning, middle, and end. The only part I didn't see was there was an hour when the plaintiffs went with the city attorney into a conference room and they tried to find a settlement. And so I'm not sure what happened during that time because that was not public. But all the public part I saw.
What was your impression?
Well, Anthony Prince and Company put on a very, very solid case. They proved their points over and over and over again with testimony and data and facts, refuting city facts.
What were the main points?
Well, the case seemed revolved around whether the city has sufficient shelter so that if they closed Ross Camp, that they would have a usable, low-barrier access to shelter for every single person, that not one person would be just banished to nowhere. And that was the challenge the city had, because under Martin versus Boise, they say that you can't just go mess with people who have no means to live just because they don't have any means to live, unless you can, you know, offer them a shelter space. At least that's my understanding of it. And there was a lot of argument about that in the court between the city attorney and Anthony Prince about what exactly Martin versus Boise demands cities to do.
I remember the judge kept pressing the point that he kept asking, has anyone been prosecuted for a citation of the cruel and unusual punishment type banned by Martin versus Boise, sleeping, resting, lying, that sort of thing. And that was something apparently that Anthony Prince was not really ready for.
He didn't know. He didn't know if anyone had been prosecuted under that. And it wasn't really proper for the judge to ask for Anthony Prince to be giving testimony and evidence out of the blue, separate from what was presented in the trial or what the city attorney was presenting and what those issues were. It's certainly a clarifying, you know, a question that's pertinent to the general area of how cities treat homeless people. And I guess in irrelevance with Martin versus Boise is that they were prosecuting these homeless people for these, sleeping, covering up with a blanket, camping on public property. And in this case, the city, by not prosecuting, this encampment had grown.
It would have been appropriate for Anthony, this is something he screwed up on, to call the city attorney to the stand and ask him if he'd been prosecuting any cases, how many sleeping ban cases he prosecuted that year or the year before, and so forth. And also how many, is it not true that citations for being in a closed area continue to rise, as well as stay away orders in the public parks based on such infractions? And Prince didn't do this, didn't prepare for this. Of course, he wouldn't have known this was a focal point for the judge. But when it became clear it was, it was a problem getting Anthony, it's a mixed bag getting Anthony's attention. He was very much of a sort of a hustling around back and forth, very energetic, and of course, as he constantly reminded everybody, deaf in one ear. So it was a problem there, but he's also a very determined fellow who insists on control of his case. Or at least that's how it feels to me. You were going to say?
I hadn't thought of that idea of calling the city attorney to test.
I hadn't either until now.
I mean, that's brilliant, Robert. I wish you'd thought that's what the esprit de l'escalier, the spirit of the stairway, the great thought you have 3 hours after the nick of time. Yeah. What at the time, I thought he should have called Keith McHenry to the stand to talk about. Keith had direct testimony.
That too, for sure. That's not a bad idea.
And he didn't do that either. He just sat there and went, I don't know.
Everybody at the witness table except for, I guess, did Santos, the homeless guy from Ross, get called to I don't think he was called. Was he?
I don't think he testified.
He and I did not testify.
Yeah,
you were called in as an expert witness on the issue of what, homeless deaths or?
I was called to be a expert witness and to talk about what the outcome would be if encampments are closed, what happens to the people afterwards. And I have direct knowledge of encampments being shut down and what happened afterwards.
You gave the 3-page declaration on that.
I did. I don't know if it ever made it into the file, but I wrote one up, and maybe we could publish it at some point on the Huff website or something.
And indeed, you still have a blog that you haven't updated lately, but you have a lot of historical stuff on it called...
Oh, yeah. Becky Johnson, onewomantalking.blogspot.com. And you can see a lot of articles I wrote and collected other newspapers or press of the day accumulated in one place there. And it pretty much goes up and it pretty much ends when we finished up the Santa Cruz 11 trial. So all that whole period is documented there, and it's still up there. I just haven't added anything to it for a while. I'm mostly, my social media right now is Twitter.
You also have some news about events in Seaside. I think we might have talked about this the last time you did an interview with me, but I'm not sure. Something about the city manager of Seaside being a great guy, who I found rather unlikely, but
yeah.
You and Wes White, apparently ever optimistic about city officials. But go ahead. Tell me about it.
Okay, his name is Craig Malin, and he's the city manager for the city of Seaside, and he's no Martine Burnell. He actually has a lot of compassion for homeless people. He's looking around for solutions to them, to their situation, and
this actually manifests itself in real action.
Well, they just got a HEAP award. I'm not sure. That's like federal money or something like that. We'll see how they spend it.
No. That does not make the cut. The question is, as a city manager...
Every city does that, right?
What city manager activity, specifically, has he recommended, let's say, for example, in laws that criminalize the homeless?
He suspended enforcement of the camping ordinance in the city of Seaside.
How about trespassing ordinances, being in a park ordinances, other ordinances that criminalize the homeless?
Correct. Trespass on public property is not being enforced.
And you know that because?
Well, admittedly, it's because we asked Craig Malin and that's what he told us. But we haven't heard any reports from homeless people that said different. So nothing to contradict it.
A story from Police Chief Andy Mills that, camping tickets have gone down. He finally acknowledges that trespassing tickets have gone up, and then quickly adds, we give tickets for people trespassing on private property. What he doesn't mention is that public property trespassing is what we're talking about, and things like being in a park after dark on that public property or in other so-called closed areas is what the city now seems to be, well, has always been, well, certainly in the last few years, doing a lot of ticketing.
That's what I see Santa Cruz doing in the last few years, is they're closing everything and putting fences around and locking everybody out. For public facilities, public land, public parks, it's off limits to the public.
Anything new on the Lapis Road loiterers?
Well, no one can park on Lapis Road anymore. The entire 2-mile stretch is no parking, even though it's out in the country and it's
in the coastal zone.
It's in the coastal zone, and there's a recreational, like a nature path that comes from there. So that'd be a perfect place to park your car and go down the nature path.
Did they get an exception from the local coastal commission allowing them to post no parking signs?
Apparently they have slipped through the fingers of the coastal commission with their
What do you mean by that?
meaning that I don't think anyone filed a complaint. So that would have kind of...
If they didn't get a coastal permit, anyone could file a complaint at any time.
Mm-hmm.
I see. Nicely put. Well, we've been talking with Becky Johnson, and I'm going to allow her to finish her dinner.
So we'll leave it at that.
Any other grunts and groans you wish to... She's still chewing that last bit of num-num. So we'll let it go.
And we're pretty much reaching the end now of this Thursday evening broadcast. Coming up tomorrow, Friday, May 3rd, is going to be Compassion Not Eviction protest against the 10 a.m. eviction, which is, who knows if the police will be there at the dot and 10 o'clock or will wait until the public assembles and then dissipates and then come after homeless folks when the community has gone home, because they can go home. So Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs has called for this Compassion Not Eviction protest, a nonviolent protest against the eviction of Heroes Camp, as he calls the Ross Camp, Friday, May 3rd, 2019, on the levee behind Ross at 9 a.m. And he writes, the city plans to force the community living behind Ross out into the doorways, yards, and parks of Santa Cruz starting on May 3rd. Join us in calling on the City Council to stop the evictions until the city has provided a realistic alternative that will include the formation of self-managed transitional camps supported by local nonprofits and city services. Most of those who have lived at Ross Camp will need to find safety on the streets, doorways, and parks. Some people might get to stay at the Santa Cruz Motel for 5 days. 60 people may get to stay at 1220 River Street Camp for 60 days. After that, the 200 or more people at Ross Camp will be sleeping on the streets of Santa Cruz. The Santa Cruz Homeless Bail and Fine Solidarity GoFundMe can be found online. And Keith also announces, that's Keith McHenry, announces the 39th anniversary concert celebrating the founding of the Food Not Bombs movement coming up. But more of that later. Tomorrow is the gathering to support the last gasp of the Ross Camp and the cruel behavior of the Santa Cruz City Council and the Santa Cruz City Manager, Martine Bernal. There, perhaps I'll see you there too. Also be back on Sunday at 9:30 doing another show, presumably. And I'll be talking at you then, too.
Sometimes I feel that the world isn't mine. It feeds on my hunger and tears on my time. And I'm tired, yes, I'm tired. Every face on the street is as cold as the air, as hard as the pavement moves neath my feet. And I'm tired, yes, I'm tired. Sometimes I stop and I ask to myself, oh, why should I be so alone? It comes and it goes, and nobody knows, for they're blind with a pain all their own. So I start out again with a smile on my face to hide all the empty and search for a friend. And I'm tired, yes, I'm tired. Sometimes I stop and I ask to myself, oh, why should I be so alone? It comes and it goes and nobody knows, for they're blind with a pain all their own. So I start out again with a smile on my face to hide all the empty and search for a friend. And I'm tired, yes, I'm tired. And I'm tired, yes, I'm tired.